This is Megan Grandstaff. I'm 35 years old. Today's date is November 17th, 2019. The location is Chicago, Illinois. My name of my interview partner today is Becky, and Becky is my colleague.
My name is Becky Kidd. I am 51 years old. It is November 17th, 2019. I'm in Chicago, Illinois. The name of my interview partner is Megan Grandstaff, and she is my colleague. So I started with Community Glue Workshop in, 2014 or 15.
Wow.
And I just kind of wandered in off the street. A friend had told me about this Fix-It Cafe thing that was happening, and I kind of had to track it down because it was in transition, moving from there was a cafe space, and then there was like a theater space, and then there was an address they thought they were going to have down on Bryn Mawr, and it settled at the Edgewater Workbench where it is now. And I think that was because Allie and Stu, they own the workbench business, and they finally sort of got a space for their business, and it became kind of the permanent home. And so I just wandered in and said, I like to fix stuff, and I never left.
I think I saw something on Facebook. I'm not exactly sure, but I was like, oh, I have two lamps that need to be fixed. And so I brought in one, and I don't remember if you looked at that one, but you were like, oh, the wiring's fine. And so I kind of took it home disappointed because I was like, oh, I wanted to see somebody fix my lamp. But then I remembered I had the second broken one. And so I brought that one in, and Becky, you were the one that rewired it completely.
Oh, wow.
And while you were rewiring that, I was like, oh, well, I can sew. And this woman had been waiting for sewing help. And she had this silk kimono, and I remember it was, the fabric was beautiful. But it just had holes because it was from the 60s or the 70s, and it had been her mother's. And so she was like, oh, can you repair this? And I was like, yep. And so that's how I got involved. And I just haven't stopped going back. So now I'm part of, like, the sewing contingent. I think, Becky, you do, like, the electrical repair and, like, all-around construction repair there, right?
Yeah, I do. I'm a handy woman by trade, and... But at that time that I started, I had been for like 7 years in a sort of soul-sucking desk job. Mm. And I wasn't getting opportunities to fix things, to puzzle with things, to tear things apart. So I was like, I loved it. I was all over it. So I just showed up. And so, yeah, if I get a lot of carpentry things, I get a lot of chairs with loose legs and drawers that have come apart and electrical things. I feel like lamps is kind of where I started, because if you can demystify lamps, people will just go. They'll just take off. They'll be like, oh my gosh, you mean I can make a lamp out of anything? And mm-hmm. I'll say, yes, I have one at home that I made out of a shotgun. I have one now that I made out of a tub faucet.
That's amazing.
The next one's going to be from a bowling ball.
How do you do that through a bowling ball? Do you like drill the hole?
You got to drill a hole all the way through. As long as you can drill a hole all the way through something, you can make a lamp out of anything.
Wow. That would have never occurred to me. I love it. I can't wait to see it. It's going to be amazing.
Yep. So I think... I love our sewing crew because you all just come in and you park yourselves and set up your stuff, and then people just start flowing in, and there's this constant, yeah, I look up and, oh, there's pants, and then I look up and, oh, there's a sweater. Oh my gosh, there's another sweater. Oh my gosh, there's another sweater.
Oh my God. So we're getting into the winter season now, which means I'm about to get a lot of underarm jacket repairs from people grabbing onto the CTA handle.
Oh my gosh.
And their armpits just tearing. That was last year. I repaired a ton of puffy coats. I think sweaters, I've gotten really good at darning.
Oh, good.
That's one of the skills I kind of picked up working at the glue clinic. But unfortunately, that means I get people's sweaters, like the one gentleman who came in who'd bought this sweater at a thrift store 20 years ago, and he'd never washed it.
No.
And it was, the wool was crunchy. And he told me as I was halfway through the repair that he'd never washed it. And I was just like, oh God, what am I touching right now? And you never washed it when you bought it from like this vintage store. And I was just, I went home and like tore all my clothes off and threw them in the laundry and like took a really hot shower. But yeah, that was probably the most interesting slash gross repair I've ever had at the glue clinic.
I think that you're very approachable. I think that you're very friendly. You're very, you disarm people. And unfortunately, I think that means that sometimes you seem to get some kind of weird people who just kind of come up to you. And I feel bad. And I feel like I should go over and sort of act as a gatekeeper to protect Megan from it's kind of creepy people sometimes.
Yeah, like the woman who wanted us, both of us, to come and fix her sewing machine that was in a cabinet at her home. And we were like, we don't do that. Bring it here. And then she was like, but these hands have touched Lou Reed and I could give you massages to pay you. And we were both like, no.
Yeah, no.
No. Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm actually really glad that I never learned how to fix sewing machines. Of all the things that we fix, that's one thing I just don't have any direct experience with. And I'm kind of glad because the two or three people who've come in wanting sewing machine repairs, they're like, they're sort of, they stand a little too close and they're a little too friendly and they're like, and then if you do fix the thing, then they're your best friend forever.
Yeah.
And I, like when they come in, I'm just like, I'm really sorry. One of these folks probably can help you because they work with sewing machines
right.
way more often. And so that's the person who can probably help you. And then I feel bad because I sent them over to you.
What I love about the sewing contingent is the one person has a vintage Singer sewing machine that was her grandmother's. Oh, yeah. And then one of the other people has a brand new Brother machine.
Oh, yeah.
And then I have my very first sewing machine that I bring with me that my parents bought me in 2005. That's a Kenmore from Sears. It was like $100. And it's a workhorse.
Awesome.
I love it. So that's what I love about our tools is they're all varying shapes and sizes. And I love that you bring in your tool bag full of all kinds of goodies. It's like Mary Poppins bag. You never know what's coming out of it. How have you acquired so many great tools?
30 years of never throwing anything away.
Yes.
My dad was a minister and he's retired now. But he was also a carpenter. And so I started out like every carpenter's kid starts out, pulling nails out of boards. But there came a point where he realized that I was digging this. And so he started, he wouldn't give me his duplicate tools. He would give me his triplicate tools. So, because he always had to have a spare. But when he got three of something, then he'd give me one. And so my first tools were my dad's extras. And I still have some of those. But I had a home repair business for several years in Chicago, in the 90s and 2000s. And so, you know, bought a certain number of tools that I needed. And like everybody else, you sort of budget and you put off buying a tool till you absolutely need it. And then, mm-hmm. and then you have it. But now I work for a home repair business, a handyman business, and they provide, the business provides, Fixer provides us with a basic set of hand tools.
Oh, wow.
And that's helpful. And then, but I, power tools, drills, things like that, I just collect yard sales, thrift stores, lots of things, find things in the trash.
Oh, wow.
Like you do.
I think I've seen on multiple occasions people putting out like sewing machines in their cabinets and I'm like, whoa. I don't have any room in my apartment. My one bedroom Chicago apartment. I don't have any room. I have, at last count, I have four sewing machines.
That's awesome.
And I have one serger. And every time I pass another sewing machine, people are like, oh, do you need one? I saw one for you. And I was like, no. Don't feed this. Don't feed this monster inside of me. I don't want.
When you're packing up to bring your stuff to the clinic, what is based on your experience of having been there and things that you needed?
I think when I'm packing my things up to go to the clinic, I have this great sewing box that was my mom's and it's this electric orange and brown velour top and it's awful and I love it. But what I fill it with standard is like I came across this bag of thread that has all these beautiful colors in it. And somehow there's a color in there for every project that someone comes in to ask me to sew. We call it the magical bag of thread. And so we all pass it around between the three of us in the sewing contingent. I also have started putting a lot of like fingering weight yarn in there that I use to darn people's like socks and sweaters, because it's really great when you wash it, it'll felt just a little bit and that'll make the patch so much stronger. Of course, pack like a seam ripper. And I actually have started carrying like two, because then I can put the next person to work. Like if someone's like, oh, can you repair this thing? And the next person behind them has another thing to repair. I'm like, oh, start seam ripping. Here you go. Go for it.
That's good.
Yeah. And also, finally, like the most important thing I think I have is a leather thimble.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've been repairing like a lot of jeans and a lot of denim bags and canvas bags. And you want to have a way to push the needle through. And that's probably the most essential thing is that thimble.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What kind of things are not repairable in terms of, I mean, for both of you that you found?
What things are not repairable? Wow. Unfortunately, in the world we live in now, there are lots of electronic things that are designed not to be fixable.
Mm-hmm.
We can do sort of basic soldering if a wire has come loose.
Yeah.
But once you get into things that have little bitty circuit boards on them, if the board's broken or if their problem is beyond the power cord, those are hard.
Yeah.
LED lights, like things that have integral LED lights, are tough. We have mixed success with toasters. Toasters are, they're like awesome and terrible all at the same time. Other things, almost everything else, we'll give it a shot. We've pieced together little broken glass figurines and lots of ceramic things. We've made, custom cut little pieces of wood for that thing that broke out of a chair.
Yeah.
There's a lot that can be fixed, and we'll look at anything, which is kind of what's awesome. There, a lot of places just won't touch it. They don't want to try because they don't want to disappoint you or they don't want to break something worse. And my philosophy for my whole life has been, if it's broken, what's the worst that's going to happen? I'm going to break it worse.
Right.
Someone brings something to a volunteer clinic, they're usually, they know, okay, this is my last shot.
This is my last
effort. If this doesn't, and it's true that a lot of stuff gets put in the dumpster on the way out when we say, I'm really sorry, we're going to have to pronounce on this. And we gave it our best shot. So.
There's times when I'm sewing something and it has a ton of tears. Like this woman brought in a duvet cover that had 20 tears in it from her cat just digging its teeth in and then tearing. And so I put it back together, and I think she was a little disappointed I couldn't put it back together better. And I was like, you are always going to see these tears. They're not on a seam. I'm just kind of patching as best I can right now. Part of me wanted to be like, you could get a different duvet cover. But that's not kind of the philosophy I want to go with in my life. Like, if I have something that can be repaired, I'm going to repair it.
Yeah.
In my home, at least. And then I want to, like, spread that and the word of that through everybody in Chicago, if we can.
Do you think people sometimes just want to see the magic of repair happen before their eyes? Or like with that duvet cover, like, do you think she really thought that it was going to look different? Or that you were going to be able to pull something off? Or just, do you think people just are kind of sometimes delusional about the state of their object and how it can be transformed?
I think sometimes people, when they think something can be repaired, they think it can be brought back to an absolutely new looking state.
Yeah.
And I know we've glued a lot of things in the past. I know that soldering and trying to make things, we try and tell people it's not a guarantee. Like you said, we're going to give it our best shot. And with sewing, 9 times out of 10, I can fix something. Yeah. But sometimes people bring in something that I'm like, you need to take this to a shoe repair place or to a luggage place because I don't have the tools to get through that fabric and through that material, and there's plastic bits in there. Mm-hmm. I have no way of fixing that. It's disappointing because, like you said, it's probably going to end up in the dumpster.
Yeah.
To see that go out the door and be like, I hope you take my advice. And sometimes people come in and be like, hey, can you replace the lining on my coat? And you're like, oh, sweetie, no, we don't even have time for that. And I don't take home projects from here.
Yeah.
Like, nope. I draw the line.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think with clothing, it's probably a little bit different because people are more, more sensitive about what they're wearing. Mm-hmm. And with furniture and household things, I think functionality is a lot more important to people. And so I kind of think they have more realistic expectations with things than with clothes.
Yeah. I agree with that.
If we're going to glue something back together, you may see the seam where it was broken, where, you know, you might, if I'm going to fix the wire on your headphones, there's going to be this little bulgy place where the wire is fixed. I'm not going to make it look like it came out of the package at Target.
Right.
But I'm also saving you the $20 and the landfill space of the thing that you bought at Target for $20.
Right.
So I do feel like people are a little bit more realistic about things that they just need to work.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are right up front. And they're like, I don't care what it looks like. I just have to have it work because I love this one so much and I don't want to have to go find another one.
And that's totally fair.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
Becky, like what's the most interesting thing you've ever repaired?
Oh, gosh. There are so many things, but I still think at the top of the heap is the mannequin piss decanter. I don't know if you're familiar with there's a statue in Belgium, I think, called the mannequin. It's a little boy peeing. It's a fountain.
Yeah.
And in the 50s, some company that I used to know the name of, made a liquor decanter that had this little statue on it. And you push a button and he pees liquor into your glass.
Oh my God.
And someone brought this in and they said, someone gave it to me. I have never seen it work. I think it would be awesome if it worked. And if you don't get it working and you want to continue to play with it, you can keep it. I'm not that committed to it. And so we played around with it and I kind of took it apart and cleaned some battery connections because it just takes some batteries in the back of it. And it's got a little tiny, very, very weak pump. And I, you know, ran some warm water through it to try to get the sugar residue out. And sure enough, we put him back together and he was, you know, peeing water into a glass right there in front of our eyes. The really funny and kind of bizarre thing about this is that a few weeks after that repair, I went to visit my parents in West Virginia and was looking through some things that they, you know, kind of my dad's library room upstairs where he's got lots of his hobby things. And I walked in and there sitting on the counter is the mannequin piss decanter.
That's amazing.
Nobody in my house drinks.
Wow.
But he got it probably from some yard sale or his sister gave it to him or something. And he thought it was cute because, you know, that's the kind of humor my dad has.
I have to know, did you test it to see if it worked?
I did not.
Because now you know how to fix it. You're a pro.
That's true.
Can you put this on your LinkedIn? Like, I can fix these to cancer.
That's going to be in my skill set. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Please do it.
Yeah. Drywall repair and I can fix, you know, pissing decanters. Okay.
I mean, it's a catchy headline. Like people are going to, they're going to come see you right away.
Yeah. Okay. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
Besides fixing things at the clinic, what other kinds of skills do you feel like you've sharpened as a volunteer there in terms of maybe interpersonally and working with people?
Hmm. Wow.
I feel like I've gotten really good at saying no.
Oh, yeah.
I used to not be able to say no to anybody because I obviously wanted to make everything work and make everybody happy. But I think when somebody brings me something that I just can't fix, it's better not to waste their time, especially with lately we've had waiting periods. And if they can say, hey, can you fix this bag? And I'm like, it's my machine can't handle that fabric and I don't have the tools to get through that material. Just to get ahead of that and say, I can't do it. Or in some instances, we've had people come in who want us to do projects for them. It's not necessarily repair, but to actually make something out of material or something. And to say, that's not what we do here. We're here to repair and to offer this service to the community for free, but we're not here to make a jacket for your child. That's not the purpose behind this. And saying no, I've gotten to strengthen that quite a bit at the glue clinic and learning how to let people down easy and be like, I know you spent the time to come out here and thank you for coming out. We appreciate your support, but we're very sorry. Not today.
I do think that I've gotten better at drawing the line, at sort of knowing when to stop, knowing when to sort of pull the sheet over and say, okay, I'm really sorry, but this one's not salvageable. And to be able to communicate that in a way that isn't devastating to right. someone, to be able to say, to sort of give them encouragement about don't give up on fixing your things. Or if it were, you know, here's the reason to be able to provide an explanation so that they can understand we can do a lot, but there's a level of magic we can't do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also helped me get better at teasing out the questions. Mm-hmm. Because in my professional life, I now work as a handywoman for a home repair company, and one of the things that I do all day long now is sort of ask people in lots of different ways what's wrong with the thing. Mm-hmm. And they don't, when people self-diagnose, they sort of leap over steps of sort of logical steps and assuming what's wrong. So to be able to ask the question, okay, what does it do and when does it do it? Does it do it right when you turn it on or after it's been on for a few minutes
right.
or when it's cold, when it's hot, when all of those kinds of questions that help to get to what's really going on. So I think I've gotten better at sort of helping people communicate and helping people understand the process of figuring out what's wrong. And hopefully that means that they also will go home and think about those questions when they're dealing with other things in their
right.
lives. So maybe it's made me a little bit better teacher. Because a lot of people want to watch and they want to learn.
Yeah.
And so I also have gotten better at sort of narrating what I'm doing while I'm taking apart the blender. And here, this part here, this is what this does. This is the safety switch. And if this doesn't engage, then it's not ever going to turn on or
yeah.
those kinds of things. And so it does demystify stuff for people.
Yeah.
And I think I've gotten better at that. I have less investment in the magic and more investment in helping people learn.
Yeah. I love listening to you when I'm hand sewing something and like you're having this running narration of how you're fixing something. Cause I'm learning while you're doing that. And I'm thinking about that when I go home looking around my apartment and being like, oh, she was talking about this and this and this. And I feel like I've learned so much from you and from other volunteers there about how to go about fixing things. Also, I feel like having looked in your work bag, I really need clamps. I don't have clamps. Like
I just bought some more clamps.
Did you really?
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I feel like I have a little tool cart that I roll into my tiny little closet and I bring out,
mm-hmm.
but I have no clamps. And so I just want to tell you, you've inspired me that at some point this winter, I'm going to get some.
All right. My work here is done.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm happy about that. That's what I want. I mean, what I want I want everybody to get better at doing things. We've become a society where we sit and push buttons mm-hmm. in, you know, that sort of Jetsons futuristic way. We sit and look at a screen and we push buttons, and we're really, really, really skilled at doing all kinds of things that don't involve using our hands.
Right.
And I really want people to dig into stuff. I want people to not be afraid to get out a screwdriver and open something up and look at it. Yeah. And in the same way, you know, since I've been coming to Community Glue, I take on more of my own sewing projects. I'm yes. terrible at it.
You're great at it.
But but I've never been afraid to sew on buttons. Buttons are like the, you know, I'm a professional button sewer. But I'm like, oh yeah, I sewed up this rip in my sleeve because I needed it, and I was less afraid of it and less worried about it. So I do feel like we all learn from each other. Jason helped me get past my fear of soldering, and you know, I don't even know what Jason does for a living. He's been our volunteer forever. I don't know what he does, but he's the one guy who's not afraid to solder stuff. And he's like, well, you know, you just do it. Like, okay.
All right, okay. Sure. Let's do it.
So now I'm not afraid to try soldering things. And you know, if I fail, well, it was broke anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, like learning from each other. And I've also tried spreading the news of repairing is good and okay to like my friends. And even if they can't bring their stuff to the glue clinic, sitting them down in my apartment, like 8 of them at a time, and teaching them how to sew and just making a sampler that has like hems on this side and how to do buttons. And I teach them how to cover buttons. And so here you go. You've got the whole gambit. Here's how you can repair your clothes. And I think the biggest gratification is when they send me photos and they're like, I have my pants. And I'm like, yes, yes, yay. This is what I want to see. And also, you didn't ask me to do it. You did it mm-hmm. all on your own. And now you have this sense of pride in doing this on your own. And I love that. I love seeing people succeed like that.
Yeah. I've had that same experience. I have a couple of friends who they invite me over to dinner when they have a window they can't get closed, and then in their, you know, their landlord won't fix it.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, no, you're going to get up on the ladder with me. I'm going to show you how the latch on this works and mm-hmm. why it doesn't, you know, why it doesn't hook like it should. And so next time you have your window open when it's 3 below, you're going to fix it.
You'll know exactly
you'll
what to
know
do.
How to do this.
Yep.
And it's good because people do need to have some confidence in their ability. And having confidence in your ability to do something virtually is important, but there is a thing that happens in people's faces when they fix something themselves that is awesome to see.
It's beautiful.
I like it.
Becky, thank you for talking with me.
Megan, thanks for talking with me.
I love when we chat over our various machinery.
I do,
but
too.
But this is really nice and intimate. And I feel like I got
fun.
To do so much better today.
And I did not remember that I had fixed your very first lamp at Community Glue. That's awesome.
I love that lamp. It's in my sewing area at
home. Yay! That's great.